Greetings, friends. This is a talk on the Upajatana Sutta, the Sutta on the Five Subjects for Contemplation. Included in this talk is Sangha Q&A and discussion, a 20-minute Shamatha Vipassana meditation, and concludes with Metta Intentional Meditation. This talk is recorded at our Tuesday evening Dharma class in Princeton, New Jersey, on April 26, 2016.
So, again, good evening, everyone. Tonight's article and talk is on the Upajatana Sutta, the Sutta on the Five Subjects for Contemplation. So in the Upajatana Sutta, the Buddha teaches that there are, in fact, five subjects that should be mindfully considered as part of developing release from clinging. All of the Buddha's teachings are presented in the context of developing understanding of the first noble truth, there is dukkha, and release from the second noble truth, clinging originates dukkha. The Upajatana Sutta teaches to be mindful of subjects most people would rather avoid thinking about and have great aversion to. The purpose of reflecting on these subjects is to develop an understanding of these unavoidable aspects of dukkha and to see the impermanence and insubstantiality, of these subjects. They are all simply a part of human existence. I always talk about the complete practicality of the Buddha's teachings, and if you really pay close attention to what the Buddha is teaching, he's always pointing our minds back to what's occurring, to see life clearly, and that really is the root of what he's trying to teach. And so these five subjects for contemplation, if we contemplate them, we spend a little time considering them in our daily life, it will break through those barriers that we have to just seeing life clearly. The purpose of reflecting on these subjects is to develop an understanding of these unavoidable aspects of dukkha and to see the impermanence and unsubstantiality of these subjects. They are all simply a part of human existence. Aversion arises to them due to a clinging mind influenced by an impermanent, self-referential ego personality. The Buddha teaches, there are these five facts one should be mindful of and reflect on often. I am subject to aging, and I have not gone beyond aging. So that last line, I have not gone beyond aging, it doesn't mean that you have that you haven't died yet. It just means you haven't reconciled that aversion to death into the reality of human life. We're all going to die. There's no sense in being distracted or even afraid of it. And then also remember the most important understanding of rebirth is not rebirth after a physical death. It's what we're giving birth to moment by moment as our life is occurring. Yes?
When the Buddha said, I have not gone beyond aging, I interpreted it differently. I thought he meant that that it's not something we can transcend or overcome.
That's a very good way of looking at it. And yes, that is part of it. Probably a big part of it. And the other is just to not be preoccupied with it. You know, it's still something that I'm bothered with. But yes, see clearly, this is just something, as a consequence of having a human life, aging is part of it, the first noble truth. It's very clear to see it that way. I am subject to illness, and I have not yet gone beyond illness. I am subject to death, and I have not yet gone beyond death. I am subject to impermanence and the suffering of being separated from all that I hold dear and appealing, and I have not gone beyond separation, disappointment. I am the owner of my actions. I receive the results of my actions. Dukkha arises through my actions, and I am associated to my actions. He's talking about karma here. Whatever I do, I will inherit. These are the five facts one should be mindful of and reflect on. And if you look at each one of those, if you can develop the profound understanding, penetrating these truths, you will have developed the Eightfold Path. Then the Buddha describes how to reflect on these subjects. Remember, the Buddha was, when he awakened because he knew how to think, but at least as importantly, he knew what to think about, what to hold in mind, what to be mindful of. And so he's teaching that in a very practical way. Then the Buddha describes how to reflect on these subjects. This is important in order to keep these five subjects in context and not form even more confused views. How to think and what to be mindful of is an aspect of right mindfulness. The Buddha's words. Reflecting on being subject to aging and not yet having gone beyond aging Be mindful that there are those who are intoxicated with youth, and due to this intoxication are unskillful in thought, word, and deed. And just think about the implications of being intoxicated with youth and how that can lead to very arrogant and competitive behavior. Reflecting on being subject to illness and not yet having gone beyond illness, be mindful that being intoxicated with health, one acts unskillfully in thought, word, and deed. So you might be feeling particularly healthy one day, and you forget that 3 days ago you had a pretty nasty cold. Keep it in perspective. Walk that middle way between that elation that I'm invincible, which I felt for the first 30 years of my life, to now, where I recognize I'm quite... what's the word? Quite invincible. reflecting on being subject to death and not yet having gone beyond death, be mindful that being intoxicated with life, one acts in unskillful ways in thought, word, and deed. It was that singular subject that so surprised and shocked the Buddha when he first came up against death. That set him on his whole search for developing understanding. Seeing a dead body on the side of the road and not understanding that. Because then his next thoughts were, if all that we have, no matter what we accomplish in life, we end up like that poor fellow, what's the sense of all this? What's the sense of all this competitiveness? He didn't understand it at the time, but what he came to understand is, what's the sense of this ongoing eye-making when there's nothing at the end of it? And so he reflected on it, and he became a Buddha. On these subjects, these are the things that concern him the most. Reflecting on being subject to impermanence and being separated from what is held dear and appealing and not yet having gone beyond that separation disappointment, be mindful that clinging through desire and passion, one acts in unskillful ways in thoughts, words, and deeds. And we'll see that all the time in our own lives and in other people. Reflecting on being subject to being the owner of one's actions, or karma, and not yet having gone beyond being the owner of one's actions, or extinguishing karma, be mindful that it is in thought, word, and deeds that I can go beyond being subject to my actions. Be mindful that it is in thought, words, and deeds. He's pointing us back to those, to the virtuous aspects of the Eightfold Path, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. If we can hold those in mind, we start diminishing and eventually extinguishing our karma. I'll say what I was going to say. There's probably no sutta that I've come across that points so directly to what the Buddha taught as the path for 45 years, the Eightfold Path. Every aspect of this sutta points back to that in a direct way. Further, consider that as a follower of the Eightfold Path, one is not the only one subject to aging, illness, death, separation, disappointment, or mindless actions. All deluded beings are subject to aging, illness, death, separation, disappointment, and the results of their actions. So he's pointing to people that think that they're the only ones that are so deluded and that they're confused and they're having a hard time developing and integrating the Eightfold Path. And he's saying we all have that. That's the point. That's why he presented this path to all human beings, not just to special people with special powers or having the right teachers, etc. This is for everyone. When one is mindful of these facts and reflects often on these facts, the entire Eightfold Path is given life. Being mindful of these facts, one will maintain the Eightfold Path, develop it, and cultivate it. All distractions are abandoned, and all obsessions are destroyed. That's the end of the Buddhist words right there. This is a remarkable sutta in its simplicity and directness. It clearly shows the further confusion and suffering that arises from clinging mind and the need to maintain an impermanent self-referential ego personality to attempt to maintain anatta, which the Buddha said can't be maintained. It's not a self. Let go of it. At first, the sutta may seem negative or even depressing, but that is the point. As humans living our lives, we are spent clinging to an ego personality and avoiding and ignoring anything that would negate or disappoint the ego personality. This is an aspect of ignorance that the Buddha teaches independent origination can only develop more suffering and more endless wandering in a samsaric existence. By attempting to avoid that which is unavoidable, delusion is established. This is wrong view. By developing a calm mind and clear insight through the Eightfold Path, including Shamatha Vipassana meditation, one puts aside deluded thinking and develops a life of lasting peace and happiness. By understanding how our delusion arises and is reinforced, brings true and wise compassion as we now understand the delusion and suffering of ourselves and others. The Buddha concludes the sutta with verse, subject to birth, aging, and death, run-of-the-mill people, meaning run-of-the-mill people is a Buddha's description of people that haven't yet taken up the Dhamma. Run-of-the-mill people are repelled by those that suffer from that which afflicts themselves. In other words, we're horrified, his own experience, we're horrified by death instead of recognizing it as part of life. We get horrified by other people's illnesses or even physical or mental difficulties instead of developing mindfulness of this is what occurs to people in a human body, being in this existence. And that leads to a much deeper level of compassion. I should finish this verse instead of commenting, so I will. It would not be fitting for one awakened to be repelled by others' delusions. I remain mindful of the Dhamma without accommodation. I have overcome intoxications with youth, health, and the world. I know the end of clinging and I know the end of clinging, its renunciation, as rest, as calm. For me, energy arose and unbinding clearly understood. Sensual pleasures and sensory attachments have been abandoned. Having left all delusion behind, my path is complete. So notice the Buddha is not too concerned about sounding arrogant when he's describing himself as an awakened human being. It's a good thing to do. And that reflects on how we talk about ourselves as developing awakening. It's okay to say that you have benefit through this stuff, through the Eightfold Path. Especially, and we do this all the time. One of the reasons why our Sangha is so beneficial is we're talking a lot about how successful you are in developing the Dhamma. And that's supportive of everyone. There's nothing arrogant about telling the truth, especially when you have the intention to just share the truth with people and be an example that way. That relates directly back to taking refuge in the fact that the Buddha, a human being, awakened. That's true refuge in the Buddha, that first aspect of the Buddha taught in the Ratana Sutta. The Buddha taught an eightfold path that develops a calm and well-concentrated mind, having the ability and the spaciousness to clearly see life as life occurs. There is nothing negative or pessimistic about these teachings, and they avoid the unrealistic and delusional belief of seeing all things in a positive view. So that whole idea that we must maintain this positive outlook on life constantly is just a deluded view. It does not see life clearly. It doesn't take in most of life. It insists on maintaining this deluded point of view. One can hope to avoid the unpleasant aspects of human life. This is rooted in ignorance. The liberation and freedom gained through the Eightfold Path is developed by seeing clearly and without aversion that which is inevitable. That's the end of the talk. That which is inevitable. So if you really want to know what's inevitable, just look at what's going on right now. Right now, this is what's inevitable in our lives. And it's inevitable because we put certain definite things in place. Just the decision to come here tonight, to take up a Dhamma practice is part of that. It results in the inevitability of where we are in this moment. And the reason why I say that is each moment, and I say this often, holds the potential to keep maintaining the Eightfold Path and inclining the mind towards awakening or continuing towards delusion and further suffering. And these five subjects for contemplation, to hold in mind, doesn't mean that we should be rigidly thinking about, I'm going to die soon. Or I might get sick. It just means to understand that that's part of the human experience. It can't be changed, and it shouldn't be avoided in any way. We should do everything we can to maintain our health, our physical, our emotional, our mental health, but we shouldn't be fixated on it. We shouldn't create another personality. You know, I don't know if anybody remembers, does everybody remember Jack LaLanne? We don't all have to be Jack LaLanne, you know, into our 80s. I mean, I'm not putting him down, but, you know, I still remember seeing him. Okay. Gail.
So, I think that answered my question, because I was thinking, so if one colors their hair, are they fixated on youth? But as long as you're not fixated on it, right?
Yeah.
You know, then...
You might just like purple hair. I mean, really.
I mean, cover the gray.
there's a middle way that applies to that too. If you're, and only the individual knows, if you're so obsessed that somebody might notice I have a gray hair, you're in trouble. And notice that. That's the intoxication with youth. If you just want to cover it up a little bit.
Right.
What's your motivation? I don't see that there's anything wrong with it. You know, there really isn't.
More your fixation or how you have, you know, your feelings about it.
Yeah, and that again, that's another reason why you need to contemplate it, and you can't listen to John Haspel say you shouldn't dye your hair. You know, because he doesn't know what your motivation is. And the Buddha understood that too. There's I don't know that I've come across anything in the Pali Canon outside of the Eightfold Path and developing understanding. The Buddha says you shouldn't do that and you should do this. He said take up practice and develop your own understanding of your intention. You know, right intention is there so we can understand where we're craving and clinging. It's a great question. You know, allow ourselves to be human beings. If we decide that we're going to gently and without any wrong intention dye our hair, and we do that, and then 10 years down the line, you say, geez, for 10 years I've been doing this, and I really think it is, because I'm concerned or over-concerned about how I think, then you change it. But if you weren't maintaining mindfulness in a real practical way, you would never get to that point 10 years down the road. You know, you just wouldn't get there. So not everything is black and white. In fact, nothing is black and white. Everything is in a process of becoming, including how we apply these teachings. As we deepen our understanding, we're going to apply them differently. You know, so it's such a great question you ask. Any others? Lorna.
Supposing you do have an issue that you're overly concerned about, like dyeing your hair or maintaining your youth or something. I mean,
yeah.
Supposing you have an issue like that.
Can I add something to that, and you're not willing to let it go?
Well, I would think somebody who has that issue is not willing to let it go.
Yes, so you can't do something that you're not ready to do. So the wisdom that's developed through the Eightfold Path will eventually bring the understanding that this is something that is harmful to me, holding these views. But at that point where you're not willing to let it go, it's best to just recognize that and be at peace with it. We can't give up every hardened view, at least I've yet to meet anybody, instantly. Even the Buddha couldn't do that. At those last 40 days that he sat in meditation, every one of his views came up. And as each one of these hardened views came up and he let them go, he worked through that process. But it wasn't until he was ready to see things through the light of wisdom that he could let those things go. So when we come up against something, when I cannot walk out the door unless my head is well shaved, and I know that, and I know that it's creating agitation to me, I still have to walk out the door. So I need to be at peace with the fact that I'm less than peaceful at this moment. You know, I say that often too. We can be at peace with a less than peaceful mind, and that allows that wisdom to develop to the point where, you know, if I got a couple of hairs out of place, a little top knot, you know, I can still go out of the house and maybe teach a class. I think I'm going to do that next week. So again, I tried it. It didn't look good. They're both such great questions. So we don't, there's, again, the Buddha wouldn't say, you have a hardened belief, you have to let go of it right now or you're doomed. He gave us all a path to develop our own understanding in our own time. Remember, Ananda, with the Buddha's cousin and his attendant for almost the entire life of the Buddha and every day for the last 25 years, didn't achieve full awakening until a month after the Buddha died. And he achieved that because he was really upset. He was pissed off that they wouldn't let him into the council. So we're all in a process. The Buddha taught a middle way for us to allow ourselves to be human beings as we develop awakening as human beings. We're not denying the fact. There's nothing in the Buddha's teaching that denies the fact that we're human beings. He simply taught a way to fully mature as a human being, to put aside all those childish views that keep us locked into a self-referential ego personality. It's just a great question. And so when we're thinking about, I don't want to walk out of the house until I can grow that top knot because I promised those people I would, to contemplate these other five more important topics too while I'm concerned about my physical appearance. Contemplate, consider the fact that I'm going to die someday. Maybe it's not so important to worry about a couple hairs out of place. You know, And that starts putting it into perspective. And it brings everything back to being a human being. Not having any aversion to it either. You know, it's funny that, it's funny, it's ironic, that when we're stuck in a self-referential ego self, it seems to teach us that, well, we shouldn't really face the fact that we're aging. I know I'm going to age, but I don't want to think about it. I know I might get sick at some point, but I better not think about that. That's crazy thinking. I know I might lose those things that I really want, but I'm not going to think about that. When the truth of the matter is, a fully mature human being would recognize it. It wouldn't. There'd be no reaction, and you live your life accordingly. And when you live your life according to that understanding, you make much better decisions. You know, you might not have a... Men are very famous for having midlife crises and buying Corvettes when they're 60 years old, and you know, and they probably should buy a little bigger sedan because they might run into a tree or something. It's those silly decisions that we make that could have devastating consequences because we're not accepting the truth of who we are. And that really, and it's big decisions, but it's also these subtle little decisions that we continue to make that reinforce this self-referential ego self that leads to this preoccupation and the distraction of dukkha. So these contemplating, holding in mind these bigger questions puts things into perspective. Especially the perspective of the Eightfold Path. Lorna.
Can I just explain that a bit? On that article that was read, can you just read the five
Oh, okay.
Statements? Now I've kind of got the overview.
I will. So these are the five facts, five subjects that one should be mindful of and reflect on often. I am subject to aging and I have not gone beyond aging. I am subject to illness and I have not gone beyond illness. I am subject to death and I have not gone beyond death. I am subject to impermanence and the suffering of being separated from all that I hold dear and appealing, and I have not gone beyond separation, disappointment. And that points to I have not gone beyond the impermanence of my hair staying black for the rest of my life, right? I haven't gone beyond that yet. And when my hair starts turning gray, I now have that separation disappointment. I am the owners of my actions. I receive the results of my actions. Dukkha arises, suffering arises, or that an unsatisfactory experience arises through my actions, and I am associated to my actions. Whatever I do, I will inherit. These are the five facts one should be mindful of and reflect on. Is that helpful? Good. And again, we have to, hearing it once or twice, or five, it's like hearing the Eightfold Path. You reflect on these. Hold them in mind. Think about them, and think about them often, not to the point of distraction, and not to the point of becoming morbid about it, just to face the fact of our own existence. And that really isn't that difficult. It doesn't mean that we're going to spend the next 10 years of our lives contemplating these things. If you contemplate it, if you think about it often enough, you know, you might really get to the root of it in a couple hours or a couple days. Practicing this path, the Eightfold Path, is about awakening, fully maturing in this lifetime. The Buddha wasn't concerned about, or not too concerned about, what's going to happen in a future life or a future plane of existence. He taught people how to awaken. Everything that the Buddha taught is applicable to this lifetime. And actually, it's applicable into whatever moment we find ourselves in, life as life occurs. Any other questions? Comments?
I'm just thinking that sutta that you just read, it would be difficult to hear, if you're just learning about this, to hear that first, rather than, you know, start your practice and, you know, the three marks of existence and that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're right. And it's another reason to understand, and it's hard when you only hear this once. If somebody came to this class, I think I'd qualify it a little bit more. Maybe I might forget. Everything the Buddha taught was taught in the context of the Four Noble Truths. So, I mean, I remember when I first started reading the Pali Canon, I couldn't make sense of it because I come across something like this. And I said, well, why is that important even to think about these things? But in the proper context, it makes sense why the Buddha would teach this. So, it's very easy to take things out of context, especially when you just hear them or hear them in a way that it was never taught in the context. You know, some of the some of the misunderstandings that are common today in modern Buddhism are because they were taken out of the context they were presented in. Dependent origination is probably the most wildly misapplied teaching that the Buddha ever gave, and it's probably the most important. Meaning, they've taken just the words dependent origination and say that, well, everything is interdependent or interconnected. That's a good example. But when you understand dependent origination within the broader context, then it makes sense. You see how it fits, and you wouldn't think of taking it out of that context. So, yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Seeing that these things all come back to the Four Noble Truths, and the first noble truth of, sickness, old age, and death. The five things to think about: sickness, old age, death, the dependent origination, becoming, gives rise to birth, which is sickness, old age, and death.
Yeah.
So it's sort of the bedrock of the human experience. It keeps coming back to that. It keeps coming back to just reality
of
human existence here.
Yeah.
We're all, I guess that's the only thing that we're all one with, is sickness, old age, and death.
Yeah, the unsatisfactory nature of life. That's the nexus for us all. Again, what you just described is the First Noble Truth. You know, and as we deepen our understanding of it, we see how that applies to everything. You know, one of the things that it's important to understand about the First Noble Truth, and there's an unsatisfactory nature to life, is to let other people be part of that First Noble Truth. Then you won't be disappointed by other people when they act in ways that you wish they wouldn't act, or that they didn't fulfill your expectations. That came up last week, I think, with Mark. Often we're disappointed with people because we placed unrealistic expectations on other people, especially those that are closest to us. When they disappoint us, we fail to recognize, well, that's just part of the First Noble Truth. That's all it is. And then there's no reaction. Then we're not hurt by it. And we don't take it personally. We don't think, oh, that person doesn't love me anymore because they forgot my birthday. It's part of the First Noble Truth, just a distraction. I think I thought about that, why I use that analogy. There was a time, there were six of us. My mom had six kids. And there was a Mother's Day about when I was 14 or 15. And at that time in my life, I was pretty wild, and there wasn't really anybody in my family that was happy I was a part of that family. But they were stuck with me. But Mother's Day came along, and nobody remembered Mother's Day except me. So I very quickly was able to reestablish myself as a fair-haired boy, which lasted about 24 hours. But why don't we meditate, and then we'll go around the room. So find your relaxed meditative posture, holding your back straight but not stiff, your ears aligned with your shoulders and nose aligned with your navel. And holding yourself very loosely, very gently, very lovingly. Allow yourselves to settle into this room. Settle into your bodies. Settle into your seats. Settle into your bodies. And settle into your minds. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in our bodies. Just get a feel for what that's like. To be mindful of your breath and your body. And while remaining mindful of your breath and your body, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings, thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. I'll repeat that. When you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing.
putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing.
not following a thought with a thought, remaining mindful of our breathing. If a persistent thought or feeling arises, stay with it for a moment or two, recognize it as impermanent, and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. And we'll meditate for 5 more minutes. Take a moment to notice the quality of your mind. Be at peace with your mind. And when you're ready, you can gently open your eyes. So Matt, how's your practice?
Hey everybody. Hey everybody. Practice is going well. I'm just enjoying it, really. Really enjoy it. As it continues and as I practice being with life as it occurs, I just, it's enjoyable to me. And no complaints.
I'm glad you're here. There's great peace with just letting things be, including myself. Mm-hmm. Stefan, great to see you.
Good to see you too. I struggle to find time to sit in the morning and the evening when I'm not too sleepy to sit decently. And I don't know. Sort of has me wondering if working outside all day is sort of ruining this endeavor for me. It's too bad. Like I like the work, but if I'm really not like alert for enough of the rest of the day, that's a lot to give up.
Yeah. I wish I had an answer for you. There's all types of difficulties, isn't there? Individual lives. I know what you do, and it's very physically demanding, and mentally too. I would expect.
Stefan, maybe you can meditate outside. It's a good time of year.
Maybe.
And if you can, maybe cut down the length of time. I'm not sure how long you're meditating, but. Especially that second one, and just try to incorporate that as best you can, and then it's a matter of letting it be, letting it be whatever it is, and you do the best you can. Part of right effort is just that; it's just doing the best you can and being at peace with it. Mm-hmm. So, not very satisfying answers. The answer is part of that first noble truth. I'm glad you're here tonight, Ron. Good to see you.
Yeah, well, I struggled with that same thing, finding enough time. For my morning meditation, which is pretty much the only thing I do, I finally had to switch my sleep patterns. I just have to get to bed a little bit earlier, so I could get up a half an hour earlier. And that was enough, though, that at least when my morning meditation, I wasn't sleepy. And I just had to find a place. For me, I go sit in my truck because it's the only place where I have privacy at that time of day. And you know what? It looked ridiculous to me in the beginning, and I finally realized, well, this is what it is. Mm-hmm. Period.
Yeah.
So it's gone. Yeah. There's infinite variety in it, though. And it goes from having, a whole bunch of breathing and whatever, a couple of thoughts, drifting in and out to just, kind of playing guacamole with lust and ill will. Lust and ill will.
one of my online students uses that line a lot too, guacamole.
Yeah, so it keeps popping up. There seems to be not a whole lot of rhyme or reason, right? What kind of a practice it's going to be, for that time.
Yeah.
But I just stopped beating myself over the head with it. It seems to work.
Yeah, the outer and inner appearance of practice is impermanent too. It's going to feel different at different times. Sometimes, I'm not saying this is what's going on with you, Stefan. Sometimes tiredness is just an inner resistance to continuing, and May or may not be. That might be too simple an answer. But
I think there have been periods of that, especially years ago when I was sort of expected to sit a whole lot more, and I was having a hard time staying awake, but I think it's less often that way now, or just that I'm not really sleeping enough.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. It likely is just that simple, you know? Yeah. And you keep doing it. I'm glad you're here. Glad you're here, Rob. Judy, how are you tonight?
I'm well, thank you, Don.
Good.
My practice is going pretty well. You know, I've never really had the evening practice going, but I started to have the time and take the time and make myself do it. And I have to say, a couple of evenings ago, I just, it was really great. Like, I had this nice, really nice feeling doing it in the evening, you know, like I enjoyed it,
yeah.
You know? I mean, normally I'm kind of neutral about it, you know, I do it and it's good, but I just really enjoyed it, so that was nice. And like Matt said, I've been aware lately of really enjoying just seeing life, being with what's happening. Because I have a tendency to kind of feel responsible for making sure everything goes okay and everybody's right. And those people close to me. And I've kind of begun to let go of that, but that's not really, their dukkha is their dukkha and not my dukkha. Doesn't have to be my dukkha, I'm making it my dukkha.
Yeah.
So that's been a really nice realization for me recently.
Yeah.
And I've been able to kind of let go and
yeah.
Realize that. It's been nice.
Yeah.
It's freeing.
It is. And your actual participation in other people's lives, I bet, hasn't changed all that much, has it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But your expectations of yourself and what you should be doing has changed. It brings such great peace.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it took a little while to integrate that second sit. Most people would say the same thing, and now that you do it, you enjoy it.
Yeah.
So almost everybody. I mean, there's a few students I had that they just take right to meditation, and you know, twice a day, 20, 30 minutes twice a day works. But most people have to. They start with a morning practice and they add the second practice. Some people find it easier to start meditating later in the day, and then they'll add a second practice in the morning. But, you know, it takes effort. That's, again, it's all part of that Eightfold Path. I was talking to someone who was talking about one of their, I think it was their spouse, who's been trying real hard to meditate, and they put a lot of effort into it, but they don't do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, they don't
yeah.
develop the Eightfold Path, and it's that refined mindfulness that we develop that supports meditation, and then meditation supports the Eightfold Path, the rest of it too, so it works together. Thank you, glad you're here.
Okay.
Bonnie, good to see you.
I think for me, it's almost like when you start eating really healthy and your body craves like vegetables or something, when I start feeling myself being anxious or like there's a lot of stuff going on, I almost crave to have to sit and to be quiet. And I don't always do 20 minutes. This is my longest sit, but I probably use my breath many times throughout the day, whether it's 5 minutes or it's even a minute in between things, to really sort of right my gyroscope or something, because I feel like it's so supportive. Holy cow, it really has been significant, I think, for me. I mean, people who even know something say, they're all they call. So.
It's not Xanax.
Well, you know, there's this, especially I think a few months ago when I started noticing benefits, I was like, people say, how are you? I'm like, oh, I'm okay. am I, you know, like, Yeah, and it's actually also sometimes clients talk about when they go on medication, they have this feeling of, I'm not numb, but there's this feeling of, you know, they don't have a full range. Or I feel like I'm really learning to have a full range and stay in the middle instead of being like having my life be like an Italian opera, like. So, it's and for me also all the teachings have been so significant too.
Yeah, I think you're really seeing how that framework of the Eightfold Path brings such practical benefits to life. Yeah, it does.
It's like you said, I can change my thoughts and I can choose my thoughts, and the breath helps me to do that.
Yeah. You can almost take the goal out, although it's important to remember that it's awakening, because that seems like it's something so special that it can take us out of this moment, but it really is developing full maturity. You know? And that's what you're describing as a mature response to life.
Which is the last of the five things that is in the Upathara Sutta.
Is that how you say it?
I don't know. I have my little cheat sheet. Ability and make my own choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Our actions determine what our experience is going to be. Thank you. Anthony, good to see you.
Hi, John. I enjoyed the teachings tonight. Yeah. And when you were giving it, I sort of like was thinking, it's interesting how, unlike a lot of other teachers, the Buddha points to emptiness instead of creating all this flowery imagery and stripping away the thoughts and the ego and the body and just pointing to basically the beingness of us. And and I realized that a lot of other teachings do that, but in a different way. Like Christ says the kingdom of heaven is, you're not going to find the kingdom of heaven with any signpost, even though everybody thinks it's some magical place up in the sky.
Yeah.
He said the kingdom of heaven is within you.
Yeah.
And basically he was saying the same thing as the Buddha, but with all this flowery language pointing to some kingdom and some heaven, where the Buddha actually takes the opposite approach and just points to emptiness and says, strip it all away.
Yeah. Well, and what he's pointing to is emptiness of clinging. And there's nothing flowery about letting go of all your clinging. You know? So yeah, you bring up another, it's a great point, Anthony. And everything the Buddha taught was to that. When he described awakening, it wasn't in any flowery or mystical terms. It was just release from clinging. When he called Kandana Anakandana, the one who understands, Kandana said, I see the arising of all conditioned things and the cessation of all cessation, all conditioned things. Buddha, bingo, you got it. Yeah. Not such a big deal, is it? He didn't use those words. He didn't use it. Bingo wasn't around then. Diane, how are you?
Fine. I mean, thank you. Glad to be here, and thank you again for your steadfastness in making this possible. I really appreciate that.
Matt's got something to do with that too. So just to...
Well, okay, I'll give you a hug too. Stefan, I'm a lot older than you are. And I was really giving myself a really good excuse because I've been doing manual labor for the last 3 weeks and I thought, I'm too old for this kind of stuff and I'm going to take off Tuesday nights and Saturday morning and just sleep because I deserve it, I'm old enough, and I'm going to get the sleep that I need. And maybe I'm not quite doing the hard manual labor that you are, and I'm not demeaning that, you know, belittling that in any way whatsoever, but I just was identifying with you. And I let myself go into this sleep. Every time I was at home, I would sleep. I'd stuff something in my mouth and then I'd just lay down and sleep. And I could sleep. And about a week ago, I thought, I was laying there, you know, cuddled up in my pillow and I thought, you know, I'm really not sleepy. I have energy. And the other thing, I mean, it just amazed me that I let myself realize that there was, I mean, my body was adjusting to the work, and I'm really thankful for my body being able to adjust the way, I mean, it's a good, strong, healthy body. And the other thing was, it's amazing about meditation, but it rests me. I can meditate, and I've been doing it like 2 or 3 times a day, I mean like 5 minutes like in the afternoon. I do the 20 in the morning and the 20 in the evening, but sometimes I'll do a 5 minute here or there. And when I come out of that, it's like I took a 20 minute nap or half an hour nap or something like that. But the thing is, I resisted it because I still have quite an aversion to religious kind of, you know, stuff. And don't judge me about that. But anyway, and to just really get into my body the way meditation, you know, teaches me through the breath and following my breath, and sometimes I'll go to, you know, head to toe. Anyway, I wanted to say that. I'm babysitting 3 girls and a boy, 4 kids in one family. And my mother always said to me, and my father, be like your brother. Just be like your brother. Why can't you be like your brother? And somehow in my mind, I got thinking, there's something wrong with being a girl. I shouldn't be a girl. I should be like my brother. And so my mind did a lot of weird things to try to be like my brother, although I never quite made it in that way. I mean, about things about competition. Anyway, babysitting these 3 girls... It's like I'm giving myself permission to be a girl and enjoy. And I know this is identity, and I've really been struggling with this at the Anatta thing, right? But sometimes, I mean, and I felt when I first started hearing it that I can't give up something unless I know what it is. I can't give up something I don't have. And so it's just like I'm finding parts of me that I'm allowing to be that never were, or that were but I didn't allow to be. And I'm having a lot more fun with, I haven't given up being a girl yet, but because I'm still kind of enjoying it. But and I don't know where it's leading me, but it's just been kind of fun to take care of these kids. But today they were little monsters, and I really wanted to knock them for a loop. And I had this, you know, I could feel my mother coming on, really strong, overpowering, overwhelming, kind of get control kind of a thing. And I sat there, and this is because of meditation, I sat there on the couch watching them my mother would have had an absolute fit at their behavior. But I sat there and I watched them and I thought, you know, this really doesn't call for overpowering, strong-arm stuff. They just want to be loved. And maybe that's what they're doing, is loving in some kind of weird way. And my whole body, and I felt like everything around me changed. When I didn't feel like I had to control them, when I didn't feel like I had to make something happen, which is part of this being my brother kind of a thing. And they pushed me to my limit, and I did have to send one of the girls to her bedroom. But I did it in a tone of voice that she didn't go in and cry, she just went willingly, okay, and it's like they realized that they pushed me, you know, far enough, and I was amazed at the way the whole rest of the day went, And at the end of the day, I was chasing around after them going, my monster in me is finally coming out, and it's going to get your monster in you because I'm tired of your monster coming out today. And it was, we were laughing and just being silly, and it was, I mean, this doesn't sound very Buddhist, I know. But if it weren't for meditation and the Eightfold Path and the Dukkha, I mean, the Four Noble Truths and everything, I wouldn't have had what I had today.
Wow. Diane, it sounds very Buddhist. It was you didn't react to what was occurring. You just stayed with it. That's the essence of the teaching.
Well, and coming to love and kindness for the. I mean, that's the way I was raised, with an iron fist and spankings and punishment and withdrawal from love. And that's one of the things I've been really conscious of lately, is I can do that to myself. I can withdraw love from myself, and that is. Feels horrible. I don't. That's when the abandonment occurs, and all kinds of low self-esteem. But when I start realizing that I don't have to do to myself what was done to me, I don't have to do to other people what was done to me. I can be present with a loving kindness. Yeah. It's just, and that comes from, you know, the breathing. My body, taking the time, and the thing about meditation and taking the time for, I'm talking too much, too long, but is, God, I really like who I am. I like my life, and it's so nice. It's like, I mean, like you were talking about, oh, I'm happy, there must be something wrong. And if you really knew what was going on in my life, you would think I'm absolutely nuts to be liking my life, but I do. It's better than it's ever been. And so that's where my gratitude for your steadfastness comes from. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for what you said. This is again, it's how it works. It's the practical application of this, you know. And there's no religion about it at all.
And after all, you just sent her to a room, not to the hospital. So that's pretty good.
The other thing I was mentioning earlier is the mother is not worried about an immaculate house, which is, I mean, my mother was a homeopathic nurse, and we had spick and span. We washed our hands, you know, a gazillion times a day. And they're not dirty people. I mean, as in... unhealthy, they're just healthily messy.
Casual.
I was going the first couple of weeks, I was cleaning, you know, going there, cleaning things up and putting things, and I thought, oh, she'll just love me for doing this and everything, and she kept saying to me, let it go. Don't worry about it. That's not why I want you there. And I mean, that, it gave me permission for a lot of things. It's just never too old to learn.
Thank you, Diane.
It was cool that, and just in how you were describing what you were saying, that you recognized a particular view that your mom and your dad had developed in you, and you abandoned that view, and that's what the practice. Develops.
Also breaks the cycle of karma.
Yep. Yeah. Letting go of those old, you know, thank you. Gail, it's good to see you.
Oh, it's tough to follow that.
It's like coming out after the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, that's it, but I can relate to a lot of people here, and, you know, my practice is going well. It took me a long time to get a second practice. I could find a lot of, I definitely had aversion. Find diversions, if it's something to read, or, you know, I would just find other things to do. And the second practice sometimes is just 4 or 5 minutes, probably more so than it is longer, but I feel like that is still helpful, and at least I do just sit for it, and that's really good. But I also find such joy in, like, everyday life. And the other thing I was thinking is, you know, when I had to make a decision about something, you know, I think, oh, well, is that person going to be upset? Or, and I would, there's a few people in my life who I would ask, you know, because I would
I would value their wisdom, and I feel like it's given me like the wisdom, like, oh, it's so clear. You know, the, a lot of the answers are more clear to me now. Yeah. You know, just because you don't have all these O's for that person, it just is what it is, and it helps with that kind of thing somewhere.
Oh yeah, when you even if you're not mindful of it in the moment, developing that Eightfold Path brings that peace, because we know we're living lives with integrity then. You know, and we don't. No reason to question it in any way.
Right. So it's a little more clear.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you're here. Thank you, Liz. How are you tonight?
I'm good. I'm good. I was nodding quite a bit during the meditation. Just feeling pretty tired, and still having some of the agitation I talked about last week, and just sort of grabbed myself by the scruff of my neck and threw myself out the door today, and I said, just walk until I could shift what was going on in my mind. And 6 miles later, I was back in my body because my feet were hurting and my hip was hurting. But it brought me into a much better place. And what I did was, with every step, I would say I would try to bring myself back down to the reality of present moment, where I was, what was around me. It was a beautiful day, so it was walk, breathe with every step of each foot, breathe, walk, breathe. So it was more like a walking meditation to just kind of bring me back to the knowledge that you don't have to believe every thought that's in your head.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I was nodding in meditation tonight, because it was a long walk. But it's good. I'm a little off track, but I'll get back.
Yeah. I wouldn't say you are. That's pretty profound. You know, you recognize that if you just let yourself go, you're going to have just a more agitated mind state, but bring it back into this moment, and it interrupts that tendency to just keep going, you know, mindlessness.
Yeah, I mean, you get to the point where you don't even want to be around yourself.
Yeah, and that's really a tough place to be.
It is a tough place. Yeah. So going out and walking, it was just an extraordinarily beautiful day. I live in a beautiful place. And I walked further than I've walked in a long time. So I'm hoping it's a new set point for me.
Thank you.
That's where I am. Thank you, John.
Lorna, how are you tonight?
Good to be here, John. I think I might be the negative one in the group tonight, I'm afraid. I don't think I've done very well this week. There's two issues, actually, I wanted to bring up. One is, what do you do when you go to a meditation chair and you press the button that you know, I've meditated with you, you're recording, and it just seems old. You just don't want to have to do it. You know, you're just coming back to that thinking of the breath, and it just, sometimes it's hard, and you just it's hard because you're bored with it. It's like doing it twice a day, every morning, every night, and sometimes I just get bored with it. And I don't really know how to get through that. Do I just sit for a lesser period of time? Do I just not meditate when I feel like that? Or that's one thing. As I say, I'm the negative one tonight. And then today, through my own stupidity last night, you talk about somebody.
Gossip.
I unfortunately gossiped about somebody last night and thought about it this morning, realized I should know better. I was really disappointed with myself. And so I've had sort of a day where I've been very agitated with myself. And what I try not to do is look for what I consider fire, like to take my mind off my problem, off myself.
Mm-hmm.
I try to fix it myself. Meaning, mentally I try and resolve it. And I think I'm pushing myself a bit too hard, because when you feel like that, sometimes if you just put some music on, or you watch television, or you just do something to just occupy yourself so you forget about it. But doing that, you're not dealing with it. You're just letting it go. You're not sort of trying to deal with it and correct it yourself. So I sort of wrestle with that. I wrestled with that a lot today. That I had an agitated mind. I didn't want to distract myself from myself. I wanted to observe myself and fix it myself. I couldn't, so I had an agitated day all day. That makes sense.
It does. And
two things there, really.
The reason why not gossiping is part of right speech is because of what happened to you. It's not so much that you're talking about someone else. It left your mind state agitated. You know, that's the main reason why those things are there. Because if we're acting in the wrong side of right speech, right action, right livelihood, we're simply too agitated. It leads to distress for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The solution, though, isn't to try too hard to not be that way. That's a judgment of yourself. It's just being gentle with yourself means, okay, this is what occurred. And it's left me with this less than peaceful mind state. Be peaceful with that less than peaceful mind state, which just means to accept it. So it's the difference between acceptance and approval. You recognize something that you did that was in a certain way hurtful to you, hurtful to your mind state. So you don't approve of it, but you accept it because it's what's occurred. And it's... This may sound cruel, but it's very important. And you have to accept living with the consequences of the agitated mind state. Because if gossip or wrong speech didn't lead to an agitated mind state, it wouldn't even be part of the Eightfold Path, would it? So it's there. You learned a very valuable lesson. And that's something that you could feel good about while you're feeling lousy. You know? You're learning something. I mean, really, there's a value in recognizing and accepting suffering and not judging ourselves harshly because we created a little bit more for ourselves. Come back to the practice. Now, the first question, are you listening to the recording for all your meditation sessions?
Yes.
Stop. As wonderful as my voice is, I don't mean that in such a direct way. Try some meditation sessions just doing the method that you know. And see how that goes. And even if it doesn't stretch out to 20 minutes, be okay with that, you know. And since you've been doing it for so long, maybe do one session with the recording and one session without. And then the next day, maybe try to do two sessions without the recording. And then just to break that condition part of mind. And if you want to listen to the recording, just do it less frequently. That's all. And I think that'll make a difference. So, but also recognize and acknowledge that you've established a very effective practice. You know, it's not that it's led to nowhere. There's always little tweaks.
It's always in and out, though.
Yeah, but that's practice, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it just is. It's never the same. It's never the same. Yeah, so.
It's not for the faint of heart, right?
It's a practice of ease and joy, but it's not for the faint of heart. I used to say that a lot more. But
it's not easy.
It takes guts to...
It does.
It does.
To question yourself and
yeah. Yeah,
observe yourself.
And to mature and grow up.
Yeah.
you will come up against every hardened view that you have about yourself in the world. And every one of those, when you come up against it, has to gently be let go of. But in your own time, too. And that's another lesson in impermanence. Everything changes. Accept that framework of the Eightfold Path, but the application does itself change. You know, they're noble truth. It's a noble Eightfold Path. But different times, right view or right effort is more important. Sometimes right view is much more difficult than, say, right mindfulness. It changes all the time. Sometimes we're locked into right view. We see things very clearly. Then something happens. You have a bad day. You find yourself gossiping. Now you can't even find right view anymore.
you stay with the practice and eventually you get it all back. Thank you all for a great class tonight. Let's we'll finish with, are there any other questions? Great questions, great comments. It's just wonderful. We'll finish with my version of metta. So if you want to gently close your eyes and gently close your mouths. And take a moment again to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. And let that mindfulness of your breath cease any distracting thoughts to the past or to the future or that may have arisen from our talks tonight. And in metta, the first object of our meditation is always ourselves, and generating feelings of deep love and compassion for the object of our meditation. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. May I be filled with love and kindness. May I be well. May I be peaceful and at ease. May I be happy. And now bring to mind those that you care deeply for, in generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. And now bring to mind those you may be in conflict with. Difficult relationships, and generating those same feelings of love and compassion for the objects of our meditation. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. May they be filled with love and kindness. May they be well. May they be peaceful and at ease. May they be happy. And now bring to mind each other in this room this evening and all the other members of our Sangha, and extend your awareness outside of this room, across our community, across our planet, across all creation, to include all sentient beings. In generating those same feelings of deep love and compassion for all sentient beings. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. May all sentient beings be filled with love and kindness. May all sentient beings be well. May all sentient beings be peaceful and at ease. May all sentient beings be happy. This concludes our Dhamma practice for this evening. Thank you all for being here. Peace. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.